Accession number 28698, Reel 3.
You've got your break in the afternoon. Major Lawton, Reel 3. We've finished with lunch and you've got your break in the afternoon. The main meal, you say, was at the end of the day, end of the working day.
Yes, then you'd have your roasts all lined up, be it roast beef, roast lamb, pork or whatever. Because it was always a thing, where the platoon sergeant or the platoon officer would stand behind the hot plate and you'd say, what do you want, lamb or pork and stuff like that, and you would have to point to what you wanted. And it was surprising how many people did not know the difference between lamb or pork or beef or even turkey. And I still find that in the army today, actually. But yeah, you were told to point. You say if you wanted beef, you're expected to point to the beef, and then you get a big slab of beef. And the food was good, and the food was substantial. And you always had a hot pudding after it as well.
Was it well cooked?
Oh yes, especially for somebody like me who'd been starving half my life. But no, it was always good food, and always plenty of it.
And the naffy break. This was a proper naffy building on the campus.
So. Yes, it was. It was a building within the headquarters part of the building, where you also had the WRVS woman and the snooker table and stuff like that. But no, it was a proper naffy building, and you'd go in, and most people had a naffy pie, the old steak and kidney pie, and a pint of milk. And that carried on for years and years for me in particular. But yes, it was a proper naffy break.
And was the beer or intoxicating liquids sold on the camp? Was it a bar?
Yes, it was. I mean, again, you were supposed to be 18, and if you remember, I was only 17 or 17 and a half. But yes, you could get beer in the naffy. But of course, if you did have any freedom and you were allowed out of camp, we used to head straight for the local pubs down in Shrewsbury. And of course, beer in them days was 9 old pence a pint, which was just as well, since our wages were only about £5 or £6.
So, could you take me through a typical day in this training period, this initial training period? You say the reveille was
half past six. Yeah.
What was the first thing you did?
Well, the first thing was up, wash, shower, shave and changed, and into the uniform you're going to wear that particular day. So we'll say it was clean fatigue. And then it'd be across for your pot once everybody was lined up outside, and straight across to breakfast. You'd have your breakfast, then you'd have to be back before 7:30, do your room jobs, clean the baths, clean the toilets, clean the sinks, clean the pipes, do the brasses, pull your floor up, wait for the platoon sergeant coming in at about 8 o'clock, or the corporals first, and they would say, not good enough, quickly, you've got about 5 minutes to do it again, and you do it over and over again until everything was boxed off and laid off, and then you get that, and then it would be quickly up to the arms court, grab your weapons. That was another way of remembering numbers, because you'd have to reel off your number, rank and name, and eventually the number of your working parts on your weapon, because the first thing you did was check the body of your weapon and the body of your firing block.
What weapons were you using?
SLRs had come in by then full time for every soldier.
Were they a heavy weapon to carry?
Yes, they were, because they were between 9 and 10 pounds, and they were quite long. And at first, until we got older and we were classed as after week six trained, weapons would be returned to the arms court after use. Later in our training time, they'll be kept in your locker. And there was a weapon holder inside your locker, and you were standing inside your locker.
We'll speak more about the weapons later. So you collect your weapon, then what might you do that?
Well, if you're going to learn weapon drill, you would go to the classrooms or down to the white huts, and you'd do your weapon training for as long as it took. 2 40-minute periods, 3 40-minute periods, your naffy break in between, etc.
What training were they giving you on weapons? I mean, we're not going out and firing this, obviously.
No, it was stripping and assembling and cleaning. Strip and assembling and clean. Strip and assembling and clean until you could do it in your sleep and in the dark. And in fact, we used to go to the ITT range in the dark, and you'd have to practice doing everything in the dark. But it would be stripping, assembling and cleaning.
And then?
And then marching with it.
Cleaning? How do you keep them clean?
Well, that's it. You'd be issued with a cleaning kit with all your bits and pieces in, and your bore brushes and your 4B2 and your oil bottles, and you'd be shown how to use each particular size brush to get in each particular size chamber, and your nylon brush to get in the crevices, and how to take all the old oil off, clean it, inspect it, look through the barrel so you could see it shining. Then a corporal or a sergeant would inspect it, and then he would say, right, now oil it up again. And then you'd oil it up again, put your weapon back together, check through the movements and everything else, check that you'd put your correct rifle block into your correct body of your rifle, and then you'd, once you finished with it, you'd all be marched up, and then it would go back into the arms court if it wasn't to be used again, or if it was going to be used for drill, you'd be on the square and you'd be taught how to use your weapons for drill.
So what, we've got you on the square with your weapon, what drills, what were the initial drills they taught you?
Well, the first thing was porky drill, and that was again to build your strength up, because like I said, if you've been down a mine, or you've been on a farm, or you've been on a labourer, you'd have done manual work every day. Of course, you don't do that kind of manual work in the army, so the way you keep fit, apart from the physical fitness training, would be porky drill. And you would use all your drill, holding your weapon out to the side, and your weapon out to the front, and your weapon above your head, circling your body with your weapon, and then changing arms. And you would do several types of porky drill, and it was all for upper body strength and your arm movement. And the other thing it did was give you discipline and timing, which eventually took you into drill movements.
That must have been pretty tough for some.
It was for the people who'd come from an office job or a shop job or something like me. Again, I was lucky because I was very strong, having come off a farm and been on a farm through my childhood as well. So the physical part didn't bother me. But getting the timing and the discipline and the regulation together, again, came easier to the people who'd been junior soldiers or army cadet force, and this was something I was having to pick up as I went along.
How long would that last?
Oh, most periods were always 40-minute periods, then a break, and possibly followed by another 40-minute period. And you'd do it in the open square, unless it was really, really adverse weather conditions, and you'd go in the drill shed, which was a lean-to shed with a wriggly tin roof and three walls, and you would do it all inside there. So it wasn't always cruel.
So after that element of training, what might you do?
Well, then you'd put your weapons back in the arms court, perhaps. Then it would be upstairs, get changed into your PT kit. In them days, was your red vest, your blue shorts, your socks rolled down, and your black daps. And then you'd do physical training inside the gym to get, again, coordination, and it would be the Danish type, where everybody exercised together, squats and jumps and wall bars and all that kind of thing. Or, depending on what you were doing, then it'd be out on the football field, with round and round and round and round the football field, and eventually out into the countryside around Shrewsbury, where you'd obviously then you'd train up for cross-country running. And then, of course, then it would be back, and then you'd be told, quickly, you've got 10 minutes to get changed, back in your clean fatigue, but make sure you have a shower or a bath first. Where, having about two baths between 10 or 20 people, the obvious was going to happen, somebody would fill the bath up while everybody else was dragging the kit off, and there'd be two and three men in the bath altogether. You quickly learnt your friends. And that's it. Some people would run through the shower, and during the day, half the time, the water was cold anyway. Fuel efficiency even in them days. And everybody else would be dumped in the bath, and you would quickly get the mud and the everything else into your clean fatigue, back downstairs on prayer, still outside your block, and then you'd be taken away to do either more weapon training, or in them days, used to education as well. And you would start off follow-up education, ACE 1, 2 and 3.
And what was that?
Maths, English and World Affairs. And of course, in 1967, you were having the Israelis and the Arabs, Six-Day War, etc. So all that was happening as we were training. So it was live things happening, and we were getting taught about it as it was happening. But you'd all do reading, writing, arithmetic, and World Affairs.
And was this part of your education for promotion through the army?
Well, it wasn't for promotion at the time. I think it was to make sure everybody who left the depot had a standard of education. Again, I had no problems with this because I was fairly well educated, although I only went to a secondary modern school. But there was people who, to be quite honest, couldn't read and write. Many a time I would sit with a guy from Cornwall and help him to write letters back home to his mother and his father. And that's only because we found him in a park one day, more or less crying and scribbling on a piece of paper, and then had to admit to us that he couldn't read and write. And could we help him to read and, to write his letters home, which we did.
Did the army teach people like that to write and read?
Yes.
As part of their education?
If people admitted it, that they couldn't. And the guy I'm talking about, even the two sons, well, how did you get in the army? How did you do your written test to get in the army? And it transpired, of course, that the people in the Army Careers Office had did his exam for him. So there was a little bit of cheating going on then. But believe it or not, it was another way of getting together, and we all helped each other.
So these were part of the morning sessions, would it?
Well, that kind of morning sessions, and then again you'd go and do more weapon training, or how the weapons worked, the speed of the bullet, the velocity, and everything that went with your weapon, so you understood your weapon that you were carrying. And then you'd go out to a place called Nesscliff, maybe in the afternoon, and you would do some field craft, and they would teach you how to crawl, locate enemy, all that kind of thing. And then after a week or so, you would be kept out on a night time to learn to live in the field, under the stars, under your gas cape.
And this was just purely, as you say, field training?
Basic field training. Learning to live out the field. Remember, a lot of people came from the towns, and they'd never been in the woods and the fields and everything else. So while they were getting used to living in woods and under a shelter, I was off there getting mushrooms and berries and all kinds. And then people say, oh, you're obviously from a farm and you know what you're doing. And so we put the mushrooms in the food that came out in the stew on a night time. And so bit by bit, people who knew a bit about woodcraft would teach the others who knew nothing, and sheltering, and it all worked out. Everybody helped each other.
Basic marching drill, how did that start? How did you begin on that?
Well, my particular section, and go back to Judd Foster again, the man who gave me the clout on the logo the day I arrived, he actually taught us to march with our hands in our pockets and swing our shoulders. You get the basics of it would be left, right, and your arm going the opposite way. And I know you see it on some of these black and white films, but people did use to march right foot, right leg, and left leg, left arm. And it was comedy. We were taught in our particular section to march with our hands in our pockets and just do it with our shoulders. Then after a certain period, take your hands out your pockets and let your arms just hang. And believe it or not, they start to swing with your shoulders. And then it would be a case pressing down on your thumb, pulling your shoulders back. In a short space of time, we were marching in step. Other people had different ways of doing it. That was the way I was taught.
And were you trained from light infant pace at the very beginning?
Right at the very beginning. And I think it was even 160 then. And yes, everything was light infant drill. There was no heavy, not even thought of. So yes, it was the quick pace, open order march, and everything was done at the 140 to 160.
And was it with the thing in your head, you counted 1, 2, 3, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you shouted it out. For the first 2 or 3 weeks of your army career, everything was called out. 1 stop, 2 stop, 3 stop, 4. And to me, that sounded absolutely brilliant, because you could hear people all over the camp at different stages of training all shouting the timing out. If they were doing arms drill, foot drill, drill without weapons, drill with weapons, and it was absolutely brilliant. Or to me, it was, anyway.
What was the rifle drill that they taught you?
Everything, from the standard days to the standard, to the shoulder arms, to the trail, to the order arms, to the high port, to the lower port, to the present arms. You went right through, stage after stage, you learnt your drill. And it was all shouting out the time. Explanation, demonstration, throughout the whole of our training.
And this 6 weeks was purely basic training?
It was purely basic training to get everybody working together, drilled together, educate together, physical fitness training together, everything. Of course, given the physical fitness training, you were then looking for your footballers, your rugby players, and everybody else.
Did you have a game session in the week that you all took part in effect?
Yes, you did, and especially the boxing side. And it was the old-fashioned way of doing it, milling, where you and you look the same size, get in there, and bell hell out of each other. You and you, until you could work out who had the guts to stand up, who wouldn't, who could box, who wouldn't box. It was good character-building stuff. But in a way then, it was all forms in the gym, formed into a square, two people chucked in, and you boxed till you couldn't box anymore. It was called milling. I think it's disallowed now, but it worked for us.
As I was going to say, those that didn't like boxing or couldn't box, were they singled out in any way? Was it
too kind of a there was no bullying, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about bullying. Yeah.
It was get in and give it a try. And there was rules. When there was too much blood on the floor, you stopped, as I found out once. I was quite good. I'd boxed at the youth club in Brandon. So I did it, and I won that one, if you want. And then I won. You weren't winning. You weren't boxing properly, but then they put another guy in, a bit bigger, and then I came foul of a guy who'd failed P Company, a para, and he'd come in to join the KSLI, and he was a lot bigger, a lot stronger, and a lot older than me, I think I was about 9.5 stone, he must have been about 12 stone. And he says, right, Lawton, you can box collet. And we go in that ring. And when my blood was all over the floor, and I says, don't we stop now? He says, normally, but not in your case. And so we had to keep boxing all three rounds, which was good, because I then took up the boxing, and I boxed well at the depot then.
So they weren't averse to putting you in against people far bigger than yourself. You know, a bit unfair, you might say.
It wasn't. It was they were finding out how far you could go and who would go. And I suppose I was the stupid Geordie who was, I would take it all. Everything they gave to me, I would do. If it was obvious a guy wasn't going to box, then he wasn't going to box. And apart from the boxing sessions as character building, there was nobody got there to get punished. If you weren't up to it, then you weren't up to it. And everybody found out the strength. If you're a runner, a jumper, a football player, rugby player, cricket player, whatever, everybody had the choice to do their thing. To me, it was boxing and cross-country running.
Bullying, there was 20 men, or you were one of 20 men in a room.
Yeah.
How did you get on?
Obviously, everybody didn't get on with everybody. And if anybody let people down on a room inspection, the room was clean and everything else, but your particular bed space, your locker was grotty. There was things like the old regimental bath. If somebody wasn't, personal hygiene was below standard, they were chucked in the bath with the old bass broom and they were scrubbed. It wasn't bullying to us, it was a lesson to say 19 are trying, one isn't. 9 out of 10 times what happened was the stronger people helped the weaker people to show them. But if they're out and out lazy and just weren't going to do it, they were punished internally by the people, not by the training staff. The training staff didn't know what was going on, I don't suppose. Or if they did, they kept out of it. But there was no bullying at all.
What kind of punishment might that be? That did you have experiences of someone who was pretty useless all around, and not trying, lazy?
Well, yeah, we had one guy in our particular block, and he just didn't want to be clean, and he didn't want to tie. I mean, late in life, I mean, they don't get past the 6 weeks point, and they get back squatted anyway. But no, I think we all pulled together, and in fact, at one stage, we got an injection of potential officers. We had 6 lads put in our room who were going to make officers. But they had to start at the basics with us. And of course, they stood out a mile, one, because of education, and two, while we were having a growl of pie and a pint of milk, they'd be reading the Telegraph or the Times and stuff like that. But they needed the rough and ready part of these soldiers to keep them right, and we needed their education. So I think even in them days, the system worked.
Was there any... No, you actually said there wasn't any bullying that you experienced as such.
Not as such. I mean, if we did that, I mean, I've seen our corporals come in and take the 37 patent belts off and you're being clipped with it. And there was one funny thing, but we all accepted that. It wasn't bullying. You got a smack because you got a smack. Because we were on the top floor. And fire escape in them days was just a big rope that you climbed down. And it's not the first time I've seen somebody tied up by the ankles and launched out the window. But nobody was ever hurt. And I think some guys used to feel a bit sorry if they were missed out. Why didn't they get launched out the window? But now you go sailing out the window and you come at the end of the rope and you slap and you come in at the wall. And then everybody else would have to pull you up.
Pull your legs out of the other joint.
We never saw that was bullying. We saw it was character building. And if you'd been cheeky to the corporal and you'd done something wrong, then you deserved it. And we all laughed about it in them days, I must admit.
Was there any gambling in the hut? Sorry, in the room?
There was the odd playing of the cards. It was things like crash and 9 card and 3 card Nash and all that kind of thing. But there wasn't the money to go around, for one thing. It was a pastime.
Was it frowned upon by the army?
Playing cards? No, because it wasn't to the extreme. There was always somebody in the back of a Bedford truck would have a pack of cards. And everybody would carry their little commando comics in the pocket. And if you were travelling long distance, I mean, you're either sat in the back of the wagon playing cards to pass the time away, or you're reading your little commando book. That was part of army life. You know, there was a lot of boredom. I mean, there was no televisions then, and you had your radio over the thing, and that was one channel. Whatever the corporal put on, you listened to. So yeah. But no, there was no out and out gambling. I saw it down the battalions in later life.
Yeah, but the instructors, you've mentioned the fact that they may use a belt occasionally, but yeah. you didn't look upon these as bullies?
No, not at all. I think we were very lucky in our training. They spent an awful lot of their time at night time coming in the rooms and saying, you're a little bit weak on that, so if you and you get over there and do a little bit of drill, and you go get your weapons out your locker, and you teach him better to do that, and you teach him to iron your clothes, and you teach him how to bull your boots. They spent an awful lot of time, of their own time, out of hours on a night time in our rooms, teaching us. Of course, they wanted to be the best section passing out as well, and the best platoon passing out, so it was in their interest that we were the best.
There's a lot of rivalry between the platoons.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Everybody wanted to win the shooting, win the running, win the drill. Yeah.
Did you raid any of the other platoon barracks from rooms, I should say? From?
No, I don't think we did. You'd have your own battles when you start to get a bit more confidence and cheeky, and you end up chasing each other around the white buildings. But it was agreed that nobody would come in and trash each other's rooms because of the effort that you put into cleaning the floors and bulling them up. I don't think anybody trashed anybody else's room that way, to that extent anyway.
Do you remember the names of any of your instructors?
Yeah, the platoon sergeant was a guy called Matt Killey. He's still alive now, because I saw him in June down in Shrewsbury. And it was a Sunday night he came in, the first time we ever met him. And he actually nutted one of the six-foot lockers. And like I said, it was locker bed, locker bed. And each locker knocked the other one down and says, my name's Killey and I'm a killer. He was absolutely brilliant. And I would like to think it was because of people like him I got to where I got. Strap Ward, he was Cable Eye. Strap Ward was Cable Eye. Matt Bushby from Eshwinnan, he was my section commander in the end, with Jud Foster, another DLI man. Claggy Cal Jusco, with a great big 6 foot six, I think he was Dane or something. He was after him, but he was King Shropshire Light Infantry. Sergeant Parker, I'd gone out with his daughter when we were at school, because the DLI was stationed at Bransworth Camp at the time, and he'd been to Bransworth Camp, and all the DLI children were the same school as me anyway. There's several if I sat, I could more or less name them all.
And as you say, good men, were they friendly off duty?
Yes, we were. Later in life, after the week six, you're allowed downtown, and you go to a pub called the Proud Salopian and place like that, and they'd come in and they'd go, oh, are we supposed to be in there? And say, yes, you are, but you're not supposed to fraternise with the training staff. But they would come up and they would talk and they would be friendly and they would advise you.
But the thing was that you weren't supposed to fraternise with them.
No, we didn't actually drink with them, no. And stuff like that. But they'd walk across with their pint in the hand and say, you're all right, and, you know, we're so-and-so. There's one missing out of your group. And you'd either say, well, he's either not coming out or he's got no money or whatever. But no, they'll come and talk to you.
Was it good training, bearing in mind what happened to you afterwards, you know?
It was absolutely brilliant training, but I was got interrupted halfway through because foot and mouth disease had broke out in Oswestry. And, of course, different soldiers from different units had to go to help out the foot and mouth disease before it spread. And, of course, it was just along the road from us. Even as recruits, we got sent. And again, I came into my element, having been brought up on a farm, because we were killing a lot of cattle and a lot of sheep, and a lot of the lads couldn't handle it, especially the first lot, because we killed the cattle with the old stun guns. I can't remember the proper name.
Yeah, it was
the
stun guns.
Where the bolt comes out, and then you'd have to put the wire rod through the hole and scramble the brain, so they died instantly. To me, that didn't bother. I'd worked with cattle and I'd seen dead cows and sheep and God knows what. But a lot of the younger lads couldn't handle that. And we'd put the first lot in where the JCBs had dug the big trenches and put the lime in to come back next morning to find them all bloated and on top. Because in them days, we didn't know, you know, about the gases. And, of course, then we had to get big bill hooks on the end of things and split the bellies open. And, of course, all the gas and the smell was horrible. But, again, things like that didn't bother me. But it did affect a lot of people who had never been in the country before. So I was in my element, working among farming again. And then, of course, then you had the great big yards to clean up where all the cattle had been. And the tricks I'd learned, of course, at the farm by putting a bale of straw on the forks of a tractor and use that as a giant brush saved us hours. And other people said, oh, how are they doing? They're over there. And it was all the tricks I'd learned on the farm of cleaning large areas up in a short space of time. So I was in my element, because one minute I was helping the vets kill the cattle and the sheep and everything else with the guns, and then the tractor work as well, cleaning the barns and the fields and everything up. So I was back at home, having been on a farm all my life, and I ended up halfway through my training back on a farm. So I was in my element there.
What was your first army wage?
It was round about the £5 mark at first, till we were fully trained, and I think we went on about £7 a week. But out of that £5, because I only had one parent, I had to send £2.50 home to my mum, and you had to keep 10 shillings for Blanco polish and toothpaste and stuff like that. And anything you had after that. Oh, and then you had to put £1 in the POSB. Everybody had to have a post office savings bank. And if you had anything after that, it was your beer money or your pie money and your milk money and stuff like that. But it was suffice because you didn't have a lot of time off during training anyway.
Baragrum expenses, was there any allowances there? Or any payments
there? We didn't have to. If we broke a window, we knew we were all going to have to pay for it. Later in life it came where you'd have the Baragrum boot, where you'd all pay in for things. But no, we didn't pay anything up front for Baragrum damages. If you broke it, you were guilty, it would come out your credits, as it came to be called.
Was there any stealing? Of equipment and whatever?
Nope, I can never ever remember anybody stealing off each other in our 10-man rooms, 20-man rooms. No, I can never remember that. In fact, I know we'll talk later, but even I bought myself out of the army after about 5 or 6 years with the £200 I'd saved in my post office book, and I'd left it on my bed, gone downtown drinking, came back and thought, oh, my money's missing. And somebody said, no, it's not, I put it in my locker, because you silly Geordie bugger, you left it on your bed. So, no, there was no stealing right through the biggest part of my career.